Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. We've got two great guests joining us today. And in the first half of the show, we'll be joined by talented actor Isaac Lamb. He's coming to Kirkland Performance Center this week to appear in Defending the Caveman. And as the caveman himself, Isaac may have some humorous insights into the age-old differences between men and women. I've heard that play is hysterical. And coming in the second segment of today's show, we're joined by life strategist Valerie Burton. So if you were just thinking, well, you know, who has time to go to the theater? Then Valerie's going to tell you how you can reconnect with what's important to you using her new 28-day plan. So let me introduce Isaac officially. He is a talented, as I said, Portland actor. He's been performing the caveman in Rob Becker's hilarious play, Defending the Caveman, for the past 4 years. Isaac is a member of the Metropolis Ballet Theatre's Character Ensemble in Los Angeles and a member of the Coldplayers, with whom he appeared in the original one-act play, One Sunday in Mississippi. And I'll let him tell you everything else about him. Isaac Lamb, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. That was quite an intro you gave me there.
Well, you had a great, you know, credits, but they were kind of too long to read on here. So, but you're coming. Well, go ahead.
That just means I'm prolific. I'm very prolific.
Well, I know that you're coming here to Kirkland Performance Center February 6th through the 9th, and we're looking forward to having you up here. I've heard this play is really hilarious, and you've been playing it for 4 years, I understand.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is quite funny. I've been doing it for a little over 4 years now, and I think if it wasn't as funny as it was, I'd probably be sick of it by now.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I always wonder when people do things for a length of period like that, how they keep performance fresh. Because we should say this is a solo play. It was Rob Becker's play, and I believe it was the longest running solo play ever on Broadway.
Right, longest running one man show in Broadway history.
That's pretty amazing.
So, yeah, we beat Lily Tomlin. So take that, Lily.
And it's been around since 1991. It's been touring ever since.
Yeah, it's he started writing it. Rob was a stand up comedian originally, and he started writing it. He got married and sort of started noticing all of the things that would drive his wife crazy about him, and started noticing all the things that would drive him crazy about her, and figured there was a show in there somewhere. So he sort of conducted this kind of informal study about anthropology and evolution and men and women and sort of gender roles throughout the years, and kind of came up with this thesis about men and women evolving from, you know, hunter-gatherer times and sort of maintaining some of the same instincts that they had when we were evolving that we have today. So he wrote this kind of, but, you know, he was a comedian, so he wanted to make it funny.
Sure.
So he wrote this funny show, and it sort of evolved throughout the years, but it was on Broadway, I think, in the late 90s, and it's been touring ever since. So, yeah, we've got this great audience of people who just can't get enough of it, and it's been doing very well.
Well, that's good. I've seen outtakes of it. I think, you know, on arts programs, I've seen outtakes over the years. So, how would you describe the play in your own words? You're playing the caveman, so how would you describe how it evolves?
Well, I want all the men who are out there listening right now to just breathe a sigh of relief, because I don't wear like a loincloth in the show. There's no, you know, caveman ballet or anything.
That's false advertising, because Kirkland Performance Center sent me a picture of you in a loincloth here.
Oh, they did? Oh, did
well,
they?
It's a cartoon character.
I was going to say, they must have photoshopped my head on someone else's body then. Or at least I hope for your sake they did.
It's a cartoon.
Nobody wants to see me in a loincloth.
So it's more of a contemporary take with...
Yes. Very much, yeah. It's very much a modern show. It's a contemporary show. It's just me, you know. I'm not necessarily playing myself, but it's It's a version of myself, and I'm just dressed like a normal guy during the show. It's very much like a monologue, but it's very funny. So it's sort of stand up on one hand, but it's also theater because there's a definite story to it, and there's some technical elements to it that are pretty cool. And so it's sort of like a contemporary monologue piece, but that makes it sound really boring.
No, it's not. I read one critic said, let me find the quote, "Forget spending hundreds of dollars on therapy and counseling sessions for your relationship problems. Instead, save some money and a whole lot of time by heading to see Isaac Lamb in Defending the Caveman."
Wow.
So would you say you've learned something from relationships from playing the caveman for the past 4 years?
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah, I don't think that I could do the show and like doing it as much as I could if I didn't really buy its message wholeheartedly. And I guess I should sort of speak to what that is. Defending the Caveman, I think, gives people, when they hear the title, the impression is, it's like this, Tim Allen, Andrew Dice Clay-ish kind of, caveman kind of thing. And
right.
And there are elements of that in it. I mean, it is about being proud to be a man and not having to be ashamed, to be a man. But it's definitely it's a pro relationship show. It's very positive about women, and it's very positive about men, and it's positive about us finding a way to work through our differences. I mean, there's just men and women are different, and that's not that's not like some huge revelation.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd be surprised how hard it is for people to think of relationship struggles in humorous or even lighthearted terms. I mean, if a woman does something that a man doesn't understand, most men, I mean, we look at women, we think, gosh, women are mysterious. There's these magical creatures. But if a guy does something that a woman doesn't understand, women just think that we're wrong, this attitude that women are magical and men are idiots, and at some point, that sort of became the acceptable thing. And it even became like a calling card for men, like Tim Allen's whole thing was men are pigs. Oh, we're pigs. Yes, we are. Of course we are. And if you didn't embrace that, you weren't a real man. Well, no, we're not. We're not pigs. We're not dogs. We're just different.
Mm-hmm.
And we have differences. We're legitimate differences. Men are hunters. We are hunters during evolution. We evolved that way, and we maintain those instincts to this day, which is why, guys focus on one thing at a time, and we're really good at that. But it's also why, if a man is driving his car around looking for, reading directions, looking for someplace he gets lost, he has to turn the radio down. That's just the simple matter of the fact is he's got to concentrate.
So women can't ask you to multitask is what you're saying.
No. I mean, there are exceptions to every rule, but, for goodness sakes, there's just some things that aren't going to change. Men are never going to be exfoliators. When you're giving gifts, don't give men gifts that I can't even spell exfoliate. that's a completely different language to me. And men just aren't going to do that. And that's okay, though. I mean, the message of the show is it's okay that we're not going to do that. And we're not choosing not to do it so we can piss you off. That's just the way that we're built.
Mm.
But women are the same way. Women, they've done these studies. There's just these absolute differences. Women are gatherers. And gatherers, they collect things. They multitask. They collect information. They know where the ripe fruit is. It's like women are built to shop. they know those things so well. And they can multitask so well. And it actually invigorates and energizes them. And it carries through to all manners of things. Women talk more in a day. They've done these studies where they found out that women, on an average day, will speak 7,000 words in a day. Men speak 2,000.
I was shocked when I saw that in the notes. I was really shocked.
But doesn't that explain? I mean, it explains everything to me right there. So many times I would come home and my girlfriend would swear I was in a bad mood or I'm mad at her. I realized I'm just out of words.
It explains a lot.
My 2,000 words. She's got 5,000 to go.
Right. And if you look back at plays, way back into the old Greek days, they were about the same things. The comedies were about the same issues. So we haven't really come up or changed that much, and I guess we won't. So
yeah, I mean, there are times I think some people you know, think that the material that the show covers, you know, it's been trod quite a bit, and I think it's been trod for centuries and centuries. Like you said, you know, it's the same stuff that the Greeks were writing about. You know, men and women, there is just going to always be a certain level of misunderstanding between us. There's just we're completely different cultures. You know, that's the best way to think about us is we're just different cultures with different languages and customs and histories. And if we can, like, I think what the show is saying, what the caveman show is saying is there are these differences and they do exist. And if we can laugh about them and if we can smile at them and understand the necessity for them, you know, men are hunters because we needed to protect our families when we were, you know, living in caves. Women are gatherers because they needed to feed their families when they were living in caves. And, you know, those were legitimate reasons for being the way that we are. If we can appreciate those things now, today, then, you know, we might just actually be able to, you know, help ourselves not have a 50% divorce rate, you know?
Right.
Like, we can improve the way of life.
I agree with you. And I, for one, embrace the differences. I like the differences. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we have a clip that we're going to play you actually from the play. So please stay with us. I'm talking with Isaac Lamb today, who's going to be at the Kirkland Performance Theatre performing as the caveman in Defending the Caveman. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Stop holding back. Stop making excuses. Become the star of your own life. Coming February 11th, Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair continues with the Live Your Dream series. Using structured techniques, targeted speaking exercises, and the powerful process of journaling, Joyce Chapman joins Vicky to help you let go and release the anger, pain, fear, and confusion that keeps you stuck. Tune in next Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Going against the grain has never been so much fun. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live. My guest today is very talented actor Isaac Lamb, and he's playing the caveman in Defending the Caveman right here in Kirkland this week. And I wanted to ask you, we have a clip to play, Isaac, from the play, but I want to ask you before we go there, do you see a difference in what, I know the play is a celebration of both sexes, and I read in one of the critic reviews that women actually laugh the loudest. Do you see a difference in what men laugh at versus what women laugh at?
Well, I think it depends. I think that both men and women find the show equally funny, but I think, you know, at times there's sort of a culture of, you know, men have to be sort of these stoic, stone, tough creatures. So sometimes I think guys are a little harder to get rolling on the laughter. But I think really what kind of instigates most of the laughs in the show is we get a lot of couples who come and see the show and they sit next to each other. And as soon as I say something that either one recognizes, they just start elbowing each other. There's a lot of elbowing that happens in the audience. And I think that that kind of gets the laughing going more than anything else. That's the great thing about show. It's such a universal message that everybody finds something in it they can relate to.
Right. And I guess the message there is if your date has really bony elbows, don't go.
Yeah, wear a bulletproof vest or something.
Yeah. Well, we're going to listen to a clip. Eric, do we need to set this up or is it okay? We can just run straight into a clip. And this, you're listening to Isaac Lamb as the caveman in Defending the Caveman.
Men were hunters. Women were gatherers. Makes sense to me. We would evolve with different instincts. Hunter. Think of a hunter like this. A hunter is someone who concentrates on his prey to the exclusion of everything else in the whole wide world till it's dead. Men are great at that. There are some drawbacks. That's why a guy has to turn the radio down when he gets lost. If you're a gatherer, you can't get locked into one thing. Well, you have to be able to notice everything all at once, especially colors. You have to be able to tell if things are ripe. It's a process of wandering, noticing, picking, and filling your basket. Shopping.
And you're
That's very good. I'm not a huge shopper myself, but I must admit I do have moments when it's good therapy.
I think the shopping thing kills me because I've been noticing too, ever since I do the show, I've noticed like more and more the things in popular culture that the show talks about. And one of them is like when you go to a mall, like men's stores, like the GNC store or like, Brookstone or anything that has gadgets or really anything that would like attract a man to a mall, all those stores are right by the exits. And it's because guys want to get in, get something and go home. Everything else, like the stores, they like women's stores, like the Claire's accessory store and the earrings places, all this stuff, and they bury them. They bury them in the back of the mall.
They put them next to
Crate and Barrel, which is a store that is full of everything that women want and absolutely nothing that they need. Just massive stores that have no definable purpose. I remember going shopping with my girlfriend one time. And she told me that we were going to go buy shoes, and I thought, I should put in some time, suck it up. I'll go shopping with her. Maybe this will like earn me a football game in the future or something. And we went and we walked in the mall, and there was a miracle of all miracles. There was a shoe store, like it was close to the exit. And I thought, this is going to be great. This is going to work out perfect. I like walked straight towards the shoe store, and I turn around and I see her through the like a display window of like a Crate and Barrel or Williams and Sonoma or something, and she's holding these two massive teacups, like teacups the size of your head, and I'm immediately crestfallen. So I walk into the store and I tap her on the shoulder. I'm like, honey, and she turns around. And she goes, holds them up. She goes, what do you think? And the only thing I could think to say was, I don't think those are going to fit on your feet. Come on.
That would be perfectly logical to a woman,
Right, exactly. But that's the thing. That's exactly the point. Thank you for making the point of the show for me. That's precisely the point. To a woman, that makes perfect sense.
Oh, I hate to be so predictable there, but...
No, but but there's nothing wrong with being predictable. That's the thing. It's like there's this attitude too that we have to break out of our gender roles all the time, and we can't be like a classic woman and we can't be a classic man. Yeah, yes you can. You can be whoever you want to be, and you should be able to be proud of being a man. If you want to sit down and watch football and not be able to have a conversation at the same time, there shouldn't be anything wrong with that. We shouldn't look at that and frown upon it. We should appreciate it for what it is. Allow it, and then expect that if I'm going to give you the time to watch your football game, then you have to give me the time to come shopping with me.
Embrace the differences.
That's right. Praise the differences instead of trying to change each other.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, when you've been playing this for 4 years, or any actor plays a role for a number of years, like Yul Brynner played the King of Siam forever, and I heard that he eventually thought he was the King of Siam.
Did I just get compared to Yul Brynner there?
There you go.
Wow.
But how do you keep things fresh, and how do you, especially when you're doing a solo performance, you've got no other actors to bounce off. So how do you keep things fresh? How do you keep yourself energized?
Well, I think the vast majority of it is that I'm lucky enough that it is just me on stage. Sometimes that does get, dull, or at least you feel like you're hitting your head against a brick wall all the time. Because as an actor, it's nice to have someone else out there. It's nice to have, someone to bounce things off of. But being the only person on stage, especially in a show that's as funny as this, I get to toy with the audience. You know, I get to play and interact with a different group of several hundred people every night. So it's kind of hard for that to get boring.
Right.
You know, I think actors are sort of naturally ego-driven anyways. So getting the instant gratification of laughter is a huge energy boost. And then sort of getting to play with where it comes every night and can I stretch this joke out a little bit longer? Can I play this moment up a little bit softer? You know, and sort of just kind of experimenting all the time is what keeps it fresh for me. Mm. And it doesn't hurt too that I really honestly mean it when I say that I very much buy into the message of the show. And I feel like, you know, I don't want to call us marriage counseling because that also sounds really boring and probably won't sell very many tickets. But I do believe that we do affect people. I mean, a lot of people have come up to me and said, you know, thank you so much. You've saved our marriage, or thank you so much. We were going to marriage counseling, and I don't think we're going to go anymore. You know, and to hear stuff like that is pretty powerful.
Because people,
I feel like you've changed people's lives.
Yeah, and I guess it's because people learn to look at themselves a little more objectively and laugh at themselves.
Yeah, I mean that's such a huge thing. I think it's an underrated element of life is the ability to laugh at yourself.
Mm.
I think we take ourselves so seriously. And laughter, it is medicine. It really is medicine. And I think that this show, you know, I don't know that we're saving lives, but you know, I think we're definitely doing good work out there. And it helps keep it fresh to know that that's happening too.
Sure, sure. Well, you've been posted. I've had your name posted on my website for a couple of weeks, and I had a couple of emails from listeners, and I wonder if I can just read these out and have you answer them.
Sure.
This particular, I think it was a girl. I just got initials, but did not want to use her name, but we'll assume it's a girl. she said that she's been in a couple of plays. She cannot handle rejections and wants to know how you have handled auditions and rejections through your career.
Oh, gosh. That's the quintessential actor question.
Tough one, yeah.
Well, you know, first off, I have to say that I have been very lucky. Just sort of being in the right place at the right time. But you know, I do also believe in, I can't remember who said the quote, but something about like luck is preparation meeting opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sort of the best advice I've ever heard anyone give an actor was, you know, everyone at some point in their career is going to have to face rejection. It's just a fact of the business. But on the same token, everyone at some point in their career is going to have the opportunity to land a role or to do something that's very exciting. The key is when that opportunity comes, you can't suck.
Right.
You know, it's like you just really, you have to be good. And I think that just takes hard work. So, I mean, the only thing that I really know to say, I think, is I've worked very, very hard to try to be as good as I can. And if there's areas in my acting that I felt were weak, I would try to focus and work as hard as I could on those. And I think that's helped me be sort of a multifaceted performer. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot that I've done and a lot that I can do, and it helps me avoid those rejection moments. But you know, dealing with rejection is, you just gotta. I mean, it's just about, you know, dusting yourself off and getting back on the horse. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's plenty of things that I've desperately wanted to get and either came really close or wasn't even looked at for. And, you know, both suck and both are hard. And, you have to go into it knowing that it's what you want to do and that you're good enough to do it.
Yeah.
And if you know that and you're passionate enough about that, you'll get there.
Yeah, that passion thing's a big driver there. This
question
question came in from Doug in Ballard, and he wanted to know, who are you inspired by or what inspires you on a creative level?
I think the most inspiring thing in my life is my family, absolutely. I have I have an older brother and three sisters who I'm best friends with, each one of them, and parents that supported me throughout my whole life creatively. and never for a moment, even when I was doubting myself, never doubted me. And that has been just an absolutely invaluable asset.
Yeah.
And I have a beautiful 4-year-old nephew and a beautiful 1-year-old goddaughter who are just, you know, the lights of my life.
Mm-hmm.
They're my brother's kids, and they love their Uncle Isaac. And there's no way I can look at them and then not feel inspired to, you know, to do something creative. And then, you know, I have loved the arts for as long as I can remember. I loved going to the movies when I was a kid. I loved being in plays all through, you know, grade school and high school. And there's just something about telling stories and being a part of the storytelling cycle. I mean, we've passed our history down from culture to culture through storytelling.
Mm.
And there's power in being a part of that process.
Right. Well,
it drives me.
I so appreciate having the opportunity to talk with you today, Isaac. It's been fun, and I hope your performances up here go really well and that you sell out to a packed house.
Thank you. God willing.
And thanks for being with us. And
hey, thanks for having me.
My guest was Isaac Lamb. He's performing in Defending the Caveman at Kirkland Performance Center February 6th through 9th. So if you want to go see that play, call Kirkland Performance Center. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Valerie Burton. So if you think you don't have time to go to the theater, stay tuned. She has a 28-day plan to help you free your time, reclaim your schedule, and reconnect with what matters most. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Across Seattle, humans are vanishing, returning as newborn vampires. With the sun as her enemy, the moon her guiding light. Manali must battle the beast who tortured her. But first, she must face her own demons in Otherworld. Romantic Times magazine calls Gallinorin's best-selling Otherworld series vivid, sexy, and mesmerizing. Darkling by Yasmin Gallinorin, available at bookstores now. For more information, see Gallinorin.com.
Join nanny and parenting coach Meryl Woodard for a new parenting show, Another View, Fridays at 2, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW. This is your chance to get those parenting questions answered, as well as tell us what's working for you. She'll talk about alternative health products, too. So consider Another View, Fridays at 2, on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show at its new time, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And in the second half of the show, we're talking with Valerie Burton. If you listened to our first guest today and was wondering where you find the time to do fun stuff and go to the theater, Valerie's going to tell you how. Her new book is How Did I Get So Busy? The 28-Day Plan to Free Your Time, Reclaim Your Schedule, and Reconnect with What Matters Most. Publishers Weekly describes her book as a wake-up call, an effective and inspiring plan for change. Valerie Burton has been interviewed by CNN, ABC, USA Today, LA Times, to name just a few, and she's joining us today. Valerie Burton, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicki. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. And there are hundreds of books out there on this kind of subject. But I want to make one thing very clear, because you make this very clear in the front of your book. You say this book is not about time management. It's not about getting organized. It's about you. It's about me, how I show up in the world, and how I interact. So I wonder if you'd just share a little of that with us.
Well, I think it's very easy for us to always say, well, if I just change what I do. And so we look for, you know, a formula to change what we do. But what we do is really based on who we are and the challenges and the struggles that we face, the things that we've learned. And so it's very important to me to talk about the emotional and the spiritual aspects of why we very often fill up our schedules and, you know, the fears that very often keep us busy, because I think those often get ignored as we talk about time management and, you know, just do these one, two, three steps. And that's not always the approach that works for many people, because there are underlying issues that cause them to do the things that they do.
You had a great survey in the book, and I was really shocked to see this. You surveyed 300 people. More than 58% have not had a 7-day vacation in the last year. I'm one of them.
We got to work on that.
15%. I had Sunday off this week, and I was shocked. But 15% have never had a vacation lasting at least 7 days. 30% called into the office to check voicemail on their last vacation.
Yeah.
And the list goes on. So why, you mentioned fear is keeping us busy. What is that fear that's keeping us so busy that we can't even take vacation?
Well, you know what? It's different for different people. And I think part of it is just we live in this culture that moves so quickly. And very often, we're afraid that we're not going to be able to keep up. We're afraid of what other people are going to think. We're afraid to say no. We're afraid that we're going to run out of time or that things won't be perfect. And so we're constantly, you know, we're afraid sometimes that we're going to miss out on something. So we're constantly filling our schedules with things that feed into our fears. And so we end up allowing those fears to control the schedule, as opposed to peeling back the fears and saying, what do I really need based on the purpose that I have for my life and the things that I need to make sure that I'm doing in this world.
Right. And you have I think most people are probably familiar with Abraham Maslow's theory of self-actualization. You have a slightly different take on that, and I wonder if you'd share that with us.
Well, are you referring to my pyramid?
Yeah, your pyramid.
Yeah. I think that it's really important that we note that one of the things that tends to break down when we're really busy is that we disconnect from ourselves, we disconnect spiritually, and we disconnect from the people that really matter most. So it was important for me to explain that there has to be a foundation in our lives, and that foundation is faith, family, and friendships. And when we begin to disconnect from our faith, when we disconnect from our family, when we disconnect from our friendships, very often, it's the energy that is drained. It's the very source of what we need to keep going that ends up missing. And for a lot of people, they just keep trying to fill their lives up with more stuff. But what they're really, really desiring is connection. So there's that foundation of faith, family, and friendship. Then there's the self-care. And I talk quite a bit in the book about self-care, because I think that it's absolutely essential to keep us going if we're going to persevere through the things that we need to persevere through. But as we're really busy, very often that's the first thing that goes, just having time for ourselves and taking good care of ourselves. And then next, having purposeful work. You know, I think that all of us is here for a reason, every single one of us. And there are gifts and talents, there's passion, there's experiences that you have that are meant to make a difference. And so that purpose always answers the question, how is someone's life better because they crossed my path? And if we're going to make that kind of difference and be purposeful, that means we've got to slow down enough to learn what that purpose is. And then there at the top, there's our financial health, and then, of course, joy, which is so absolutely essential. But I think sometimes when our schedules get very busy, we feel like, oh, you know, joy is optional. And truthfully, you know, positive emotion has been scientifically shown to expand our capacity to handle adversity and to deal with stress. And so it needs to be just an everyday component of our lifestyle, as opposed to something that we get to when we have time.
I love something you said when you were explaining that. And I think I was scribbling away here, but I think you said, how is someone's day better because they crossed my path?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Very often people say, I don't know what my purpose is. When I ask that question, it just simplifies it. And it's different for different people. I mean, you know, I was speaking in Saskatchewan a while back, and there was a woman who was in the audience. There were about 1,200 women in the audience, and this woman was about 10 rows back. She was over to my right, and after the event was over, she came up, and I was signing her book at a book signing, and I said, oh, yeah, I remember you. I said, is your purpose just bringing people joy. I said, you just lit up the room. And she said, how did you remember me? How did you know where I was sitting? There were 1,200 people in the auditorium. And I said, because the whole time I was talking, whenever I glanced in your direction, you just emitted this energy, your smile. It was just encouraging. It was infectious. And she said, you know, people always say I just make them smile. I bring them joy. Maybe that is my purpose. She had been thinking it was something that was just so complicated, but really it was something that just, it comes so naturally to her that she didn't even think of it as a gift.
Mm.
And it's really different for all of us. My purpose is inspiring people to live more fulfilling lives. And I do that through writing and through speaking and books and media and so forth. So when we know what that purpose is, it kind of becomes a compass for us in terms of the kinds of activities that we should take on and the things that we need to let go of.
Mm. There are some different things in this book than the myriad of books out there on the shelves. And one of the things that I very rarely ever seen mentioned, I want to talk about that for a little bit. Mm-hmm. We always hear about people having career demands, household demands, family, spousal, you know, childcare demands. Very few people talk about the person who lives alone, the single person who lives alone,
mm-hmm.
because it's equally as hard for that person to switch off.
Yes.
As it is somebody who's taking care of all these other people. I wonder if you'd talk a little on that.
Absolutely. And I absolutely believe that, you know, a person who has children is going to be busy and, you know, a person that has a family and spouse. But I think we assume that people who are single with no children just, you know, have all this time on their hands. And one of the things that I have found, and it was certainly true when I was single, is that very often single people don't have anyone in their space to mirror back to them what habits are good and what habits are bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they may be coming home late every night. They might not be eating well. They might not be sleeping very much. I mean, all kinds of things. They may be running themselves ragged and almost burning out. But there's not anyone there that they're accountable to. You know, and there's no child that they have to be home to make sure that, you know, everybody's fed and all of those things. So very often, for single people, they're in overdrive and overloaded, and there's no end in sight. And so I think this epidemic of busyness isn't just about people with families, with children, because obviously they definitely have demands on their time. But I think we have this culture of busyness such that even people who are single and don't have those particular responsibilities still have extraordinarily full schedules that are impacting their health and their level of self-care.
Mm, I actually work with a lot of people like that, and it can make for some tense situations if, you know, they're emailing you at 3 o'clock in the morning
yeah.
and expect an answer by 6 a.m. in the morning. And it's like, you know, sometimes you got to step back and take a deep breath.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the hardest steps, I think, in making change is making that first step. You know, many of us put it off until Monday, or if we miss Monday, then it's like next week, or, oh, I'll do it the first of the month, and so it goes on. You have a, as a first step, you have something called, that you call AIM. I wonder if you'd talk on your AIM process.
Absolutely. I think number one is just knowing that there is a better way. I know that sounds so simple, but I think for a lot of people, they feel like that there isn't any option other than the way that they've been operating. And so AIM is just kind of three steps. It's one, acknowledgement. Acknowledgement that your lifestyle is a serious issue, that, you know, you have some issues that need to be resolved when it comes to your schedule and how busy and overloaded and overdriven that you are. So this is, I think, a really critical step, because you're saying, you know what, I can't be in denial about this anymore, and it is causing me problems. I think a lot of people don't admit that their busyness has left certain people feeling left out, or has even left them feeling that they don't have time for the things and the people that matter most. So one, acknowledging how busyness has invaded your life and looking at these five key areas of your life, your work, relationships, your finances, your health, as well as your spiritual life. And then two is just an inventory. That's, you know, the I and AIM, which is about you getting very specific and really noting how much time you're spending on the different activities that you have. A lot of people will find that they don't even realize how full their schedules are. They've got a to-do list that's got so many things on it, and they're frustrated that they never finish. But if they actually put a time limit next to each one, they'd realize that, you know, they've got 30 hours worth of stuff to do in a 24-hour day, and that it's actually not even realistic.
That's actually a very powerful tool to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've done that myself and thought, why can't I get this done? And then I look and it's like, okay, because that's 2 weeks' work I'm trying to do in
right.
5 days.
And we're beating ourselves up. Or, oh, gosh, I'm not productive enough. I'm not doing enough.
Right.
And that's not the case. There are 24 hours in the day. That's it.
Right, right.
And then the M in AIM is model. And this is really simply about you creating the vision. You know, what is the ideal that you're aiming for? And, you know, as I take people through the 28 days in the book, I really want them to know, well, where do I want to be in 28 days? But also, where do I want to be a year from now or even 5 or 10 years from now? You've got to have a clear and compelling vision for where you're headed, because if it's compelling enough, it will pull you forward and you will automatically begin making the shifts and the adjustments you need to make to get there.
Great. And when we come back, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, you talk in the book about we need to be led by spirit, and I want
yes.
to hear what you mean by that when we come back from break.
Okay.
My guest is life strategist, speaker, and author Valerie Burton. Her book is How Did I Get So Busy? The 28-Day Plan to Free Your Time, Reclaim Your Schedule, and Reconnect with What Matters Most. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Everyone loves an attractive, healthy, brilliant smile. From Julia Roberts to Tom Cruise to Halle Berry. Nowadays, a gorgeous, healthy smile isn't just for the rich and famous, you know. Tune in to Dr. Q's Smile Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 2, and find out how you, too, can achieve, maintain, and tap into the power of a brilliant, healthy smile this holiday season and beyond. Dr. Q's Smile Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 2.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest today is Valerie Burton and her book, How Did I Get So Busy? The 28-Day Plan to Free Your Time, Reclaim Your Schedule, and Reconnect with What Matters Most. And we were talking that, you know, before the break, that one of the hardest steps in making change is that first step. And Valerie, you just shared your AIM process with us. And I wonder, which was assess, inventory, and movement was the last one?
Mm-hmm. Acknowledgement, inventory, and model, your
okay.
vision.
Mm-hmm. And you also talk a lot in the book about being led by spirit. And I wonder if you would share with us what you mean by that, what that means to you.
Yeah, well, for me, it's really about the fact that when we slow down and we get quiet enough, the answers we need are already within us. When our lives are so busy, it's like they're noisy. And so we don't hear that still small voice that I believe is inside of us. I believe God can speak directly to us. But we have to slow down enough to listen. And so one of the things I encourage throughout the book is just being able to meditate, being able to get quiet and listen for that voice, because we're often looking externally for our answers. When our answers are already, they're already here. but very often we're moving too fast. We've got too much going on and we don't hear those answers.
Yeah, I think it's amazing when you do take the time to stop for even 1 minute. I mean, your book has very simple steps at the end of each chapter, a daily
yeah.
challenge, 5-minute journal question, and just a 1 minute meditation, just 1 minute. Is what
Absolutely.
You require. Yeah, and that can make all the difference.
Absolutely. And I really believe that for many people, they feel a nudge. I call it a divine nudge. Our intuition tells us things we should be doing, but very often we feel fear. Busyness is also a way for us to fill up some of that space, things that we don't want to explore and think about. And so often, you know, we have heard that voice, but we're ignoring it and being busy and being filled with activity on our schedule is one of the ways that we can continue to ignore it.
Mm. And you do. You have a chapter there called "Being Busy Does Not Equal Being Significant."
Yeah.
And you must ask yourself, why am I so afraid to not be busy? How does somebody start working through that? Because it often can be denial.
Well, I think it begins with being really honest with yourself. And when I came to that conclusion for myself about being busy doesn't equal being significant, I had asked myself a question that I really struggled to answer, and it was, why am I so afraid to not be busy? I was trying to clear my schedule, but for some reason I always felt pulled towards more stuff. Even when I would take things off my plate, I would add something else back in. And as I started really thinking about it and getting honest with myself, the thing that came to me was that, you know what, I'm afraid somehow that if I'm not busy, I'm not important. And if I'm not constantly doing something, then somehow I'm not significant. And I was shocked to hear myself say that, but when I said it, I knew it was a part of my problem and something that I was going to need to address. And so that's not everybody's story, but I think for a lot of people, you know, when you think about in this country, we ask, you know, how are you doing? And
sure,
probably
sure.
One of the most common answers is, oh, I'm so busy. Oh, I'm just busy. And it's like we're saying, I'm busy, I'm important, people need me.
Mm. Well, I was going to say, I find myself doing the same thing, because I would always ask people, how are you? And they go, oh, swamped, I'm so busy, I'm slammed. And you get caught up in that. And I started doing the same thing. And I made a pact with myself last year. I will not say that anymore.
Right. And people will ask me, I'll say, well, you know, if my schedule is full, I'll say it's full. I may say there are a lot of opportunities going on, but you know what? We control our schedules even when we think that we don't. We have to say yes to things.
Mm.
And we also have to give ourselves permission to say no to some things as well.
Right. My grandmother always used to say to me when I was a kid, more haste, less speed when I screwed things up. And you have a whole chapter saying, hurrying up is slowing us down.
Yes.
Same kind of principle. So I wonder if you talk about that a little. How does hurrying up actually slow us down?
Well, we miss details very often. We don't connect with people. I give an example in the book of a trip I was making to Dallas from the Washington, D.C. area where I live, and accidentally went to the wrong airport and didn't realize it until I was there at the kiosk. You know what I'm saying? This flight does not exist from this airport. And I was like, what do you mean? The flight leaves in an hour. That's what I figured out. I was at Baltimore, Washington. I was supposed to be at Washington Reagan, which, you know, was about 40 miles from where I was. And I missed my flight and, you know, ended up having to take a connecting flight. And I was 7 hours late getting to Dallas. And it's just, you know, it's just an illustration that so often when we are hurrying up, we miss the important details. And sometimes those important details, you know, are, for example, in my email, if I had read that the airport had been changed, I would have known. But sometimes those details are, you know, it's your daughter's recital, or it's something that happened, something you really didn't want to miss. And sometimes it's just the ability to slow down and, you know, take a vacation, don't go anywhere. Just sit at home and do nothing. Just enjoy your own community and your own neighborhood. A lot of times we're missing out on things because we're constantly in a rush.
Mm. Now, you do talk about how you were addicted to that business in your own life, and then you met your husband. How did things turn around for you?
For one, before my husband and I got married, one of the things, as I talked earlier about, you know, being single and not having that mirror, he became a mirror for me. I didn't think there was anything wrong with how much I worked, for example, and how many things I had on my plate. And then I began to realize that those things were interfering with our relationship, my ability to be able to spend time with him and to fully be present with him. For a lot of people, especially in this age of so many great technologies that we misuse,
mm-hmm.
you know, text messaging while we're in a conversation or being on the phone at dinner. I mean, it's very easy for us this day and age to not connect heart to heart with the people who really matter. And what I realized is, you know, I really love this man. And actually, I'm not enjoying being so busy all of the time. I've got to make some changes. And so for me, it was really just a decision. Now, for a lot of other people, you know, there may be things going on and they feel like, you know, I really don't have control. You know, I've got a boss who's really demanding, or, you know, if I miss the email over the weekend, somehow that's going to hurt me at work the next week. So sometimes there are still conversations we need to have. There are boundaries that we need to practice setting. And we also need to make sure that we're as productive as possible in the work that we do, so that when we set those boundaries, no one can come back and say, well, you're not getting, you know, things done. So I think it's very important for us to recognize the power of connecting heart to heart, and that really was the power that caused me to make changes.
Well, it's a good job he came on the scene.
Absolutely.
I want to take just a minute to throw open our phone lines, because I actually have a book, a copy of Valerie's book to give away, and there's some really great information in here for anybody who's feeling a little overwhelmed. It's one of the simplest plans I've seen to put into practice. And her book is How Did I Get So Busy? The 28-Day Plan to Free Your Time, Reclaim Your Schedule, and Reconnect with What Matters Most. And Mr. Eric Ryder's here, so what numbers do we want to call today?
How many do we have?
I've got one book.
Okay, so we'll just pick a number then, and we'll pick caller number two.
Thank you.
And the numbers to call in are 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527, or toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-KKNW. That's 888-298-5569. And caller number two right now, so call in and hurry up.
There you go. Yeah, call in and hurry up, because we're almost at the end of the show.
Because time is tight.
I know. I meant to do it earlier and I forgot. What can I say? I wanted to get all this information out there. You talk about setting good boundaries. And this is something that I certainly struggled with way into my 40s on certain issues, not on all issues. How do you set good boundaries? How do you set boundaries that are going to benefit you and help you make the changes that you need to make?
Well, I think first you have to ask yourself, you know, what's stressing me out and what ways are my boundaries being crossed? For a lot of people, their boundaries are so weak that they're almost non-existent. So people ask you to do things, you never, ever say no. But you've got to figure out the areas where you know you're saying yes too often. And then setting your own personal rules. I was coaching a woman last month who, you know, just figured out that every time someone asked her to do an extra project, she would take it on because she wanted to be the nice person. And I said, you know what, you're already a nice person. So what will be your criteria? And she you know, came up with a certain price point. These were work projects. Here's a certain price point. I'm not going below that. If I have this amount of time because, you know, I've got some open projects and things that aren't going on, I'll do it. She said, but for right now, the next 6 months, I can't say yes to anyone unless they meet this certain price point. And so that's really, really simple. But a lot of times we give ourselves too many choices and we keep making individual choices for the different things that come our way. Mm. And we have to set some rules that are just our set boundaries, and we protect those boundaries. We make them sacred because our time is so valuable.
What do you say to people who keep pushing back? Because there are people who utterly respect those boundaries immediately and will have more respect for you for setting them. Mm-hmm. There are other people who just, I call them like grown-up children. They just keep pushing and pushing and pushing until you finally, hopefully, what they're hoping is that you'll cave in and say yes.
That's so frustrating. I think you have to stick to yours. And that means you don't have to come up with a whole lot of explanation. You can say something as simple as, you know, I've given this a lot of thought, and I've got to be a lot more deliberate and intentional about how I use my time and how I'm spending my time and my schedule. And so I'm not going to be able to do that. Sometimes that means that we might offer them an alternative, not an alternative that we have to fulfill,
right.
but perhaps someone else that can help them. And sometimes we simply have to say, this was a really hard decision. I didn't want to say no to you. And what I'm asking is that you just respect my boundary and trust that this is the right thing for me. Sometimes we just have to get that simple and straightforward with people. But I think a lot of times we're afraid to say, I struggled with this decision. Mm. I don't want to say no to you. This is really hard. Please don't make it any harder.
Yeah, that's very, very, very good advice. And I really appreciate you being with us today, Valerie.
It has been a real joy.
I want to go ahead and give out your website.
It's valerieburton.com. And I do a weekly newsletter, so if they want to stay inspired week to week, they can go to the homepage at valerieburton.com and subscribe to it.
Fabulous. And we should say that you spell your name with an O. It's V-A-L-O-R-E. Oh, no, it's not. It's V-A-L. I'm reading this and I got it wrong. V-A-L-O-R-I-E-B-U-R-T-O-N.com.
Mm-hmm. It's Valerie Burton, and that's spelled like Valor. The name Valerie means strength. But also, if they spell it the traditional way, it'll still reroute them to this.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Vicki.
And good luck with your work.
Thank you.
And I want to thank everyone who's joined us today for spending this hour with us. If you have feedback or any questions on today's show, you can reach me at conversationslive.net, as always. Email is info@conversationslive.net. And you can also listen to podcasts of featured shows, which are accessible right from the homepage there. You can also call me on 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. And Kathy Miller in Renton was the winner of the book today. So, Kathy, we will get that out to you today. And thanks to everyone who called in. We do appreciate you listening, appreciate you being here with us. And live well, live strong, and please join me next Monday at noon for more Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Stop holding back. Stop making excuses. Become the star of your own life. Coming February 11th, Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair continues with the Live Your Dream series. Using structured techniques, targeted speaking exercises, and the powerful process of journaling, Joyce Chapman joins Vicky to help you let go and release the anger, pain, fear, and confusion that keeps you stuck. Tune in next Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Views expressed.